Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. What do you know of the Alamo? Look beyond Davy Crockett and William Travis and Santa Anna. Way beyond. Before that legendary 1836 battle, the Alamo was a mission. Like most Spanish colonial missions, its mission, so to speak, was to convert the indigenous population and make them productive Spanish citizens. People were born at the Mission San Antonio de Valero, were baptized there, were married there, and died there. In fact, over 1,000 indigenous peoples, early Canary Islanders, and Spanish settlers are still buried on the Alamo grounds. The Mission Valero was originally founded under another name by Franciscan missionaries in 1703 in the Rio Grande Valley, before it eventually settled 15 years later in what's now downtown San Antonio. The Spanish friars at the Valero Mission and other South Texas missions kept precise records of the people who passed through their protective walls. Dr. Jorge Luis García Ruiz is a native of Spain, an archaeologist and a historian. He's a specialist in Spanish history and Spanish missions and presidios. García has translated all the sacramental records of the Mission San Antonio de Valero, that's the baptismal, marriage, and burial records, and published them in three volumes. The collective records date from 1703 to the years before the secularization of the mission in 1793. García talks about the largely unknown beginnings of the mission in the Rio Grande Valley in 1703.
Well, it started as San Francisco Solano Mission in the Rio Grande Valley. It's complicated when a narrative is so established, like the one here in Texas. It's very complicated to, okay, I read the documents, I have a lot of evidence that the narrative is wrong, that you have to change it, and it's very difficult to change the narrative. Well, it started in Rio Grande Valley because the Jarame Nation, there are four native nations that were slaughtered by the Bosos Indians and the Salineros and the Apaches, and they asked the Spanish authorities to establish a mission. There is a main character in this story, which is the Fray Antonio de San Buenaventura y Olivares, who fought for, I don't know, maybe 20 years with the Spanish authorities that they needed to establish a mission to protect those Indians. And they established the mission someplace in the south, in the Sabinas River. But the place didn't match the expectations of the friars, so they moved north. One town that actually now have the name of Guerrero in the Coahuila state. So that was like 8 miles south of the river. And they were there for around 18 years. After 18 years, when all those natives were Hispanized, they were Christians, they were living like Spaniards on that moment, the friar decided to move the mission to San Antonio River. They knew for many years that in the surroundings of San Pedro Springs and San Antonio Springs, there were a lot of natives, Pacific natives, that had the same problem with the Apaches that happened in the Rio Grande Valley. So they moved the whole mission to San Antonio. So,
including its people.
Of course, the mission is not the buildings. This is a basic error that people commit. A mission is the commitment of the friar to go someplace to convert the natives. And the buildings are the result of a mission. So the friar came here, have some natives to convert, and those natives needed protection from the environment. So they needed houses. They needed protection against the Apaches. So they needed a fence, a wall. And they needed food. So they grow crops and they have animals of every kind. And this is the protection that the mission brings to the natives. So it's a continuous source of food, diverse. Sometimes they have buffaloes, sometimes not. Sometimes they have nopales and tunas, and sometimes not. If the season is dry, they starve. And the missions bring the concept of the accumulation of food. that the natives in that moment didn't have. They didn't have the resources to accumulate food because they were attacked by the Apaches continuously. And so the friars and the Spaniards, they bring protection in both ways. That's the mission. So the way that Spain made the converts and the populational conquest is not a military conquest, because we are in the 18th century. This is not like in the 16th century in Mexico. This is the 18th century, and the Spanish authority has different opinion about the natives. And the way they do it was using already Christianized natives. They step forward, in this case, 200 miles from the Rio Grande to San Antonio, and establish a mission with the same people, already Hispanized, already Christianized. And those people made the model for the locals, natives, that came to the mission, and looking at the faces of the already Christianized natives, they say, okay, they are like me, I want to live like this, so I want a mission here. And that's the way it worked. So we have three migrations. We already know the Canarios migration, right? And we have the Presidio soldier migration. So the Canarios came in 1731 with 56 people. We have around more than 100 people coming with the Presidio soldiers, because the request to be recruited as a soldier was to have a family, because they were going to populate the territory, not just to defend. They weren't just soldiers, they were settlers. We have 100, almost 200 people coming, and they came with the soldiers, the families, and some artisans and carpenters and masons, and also some people that always goes with the Presidios, because the Presidios provided protection. So it's not the same to go in the middle of the Apache territory to plant your house there, to go close to the Presidio and get the protection of the Presidio. And finally, we have the big migration, which is the mission the San Francisco Solano would move to San Antonio, with around more than 200, maybe 300 people coming to San Antonio. And this is something that the narrative that we had so far didn't take in account, because they are saying that Olivares came with four natives that helped him to found the mission. And it's not. He came with 300 people. They are part right now of the population of San Antonio, the people of San Antonio.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the records that you assisted with in translating. These are some pretty interesting records. That you looked at the baptismal records, the marriage records, and the burial records, and you learned quite a bit from them, and a lot of them were not necessarily things that may have been known, not necessarily to the broader public, but maybe not even known to historians. Can you talk a little bit about what you discovered when you were going through these records?
Well, the point, as you see in one of my books, is an exact copy of the document. So we have three books, one of each dedicated to the burials and the marriages, and finally the baptismals. This is the true birth certificate of the city of San Antonio. So we have there recorded 1,600 people in 80 years. Also, the friars in each of these records is very, very interesting, because the friars in each of these records include some kind of information that helps you a lot to know the environment or the history happening in that area of the San Antonio River in those years. And also what I made was a complete database crossing all data in this box. So far, the historians that studied this part, they thought that the mission was like a restaurant. So you open your gates and accept customers. And this is not how it works, because those 300 people coming from the Rio Grande Valley, they were around 30 families. So they established a town inside the mission. A mission, in few words, is a town, and had its own alcalde, It sound policemen, the councilmen, governor, have everything. And if you look at this organization, is exactly like any Spanish town in the Iberian Peninsula. So Spain, what they did is to put the same administration, the same laws, the same everything to replicate what was doing in Spain. So it's interesting because crossing this data, we found that, for example, we have a family living at the mission for four generations, 80 years living at the mission. So that makes you think that maybe those stories about the enslavement of people at the missions are not so true. We have in all Spanish missions around the world the same, Franciscan and Jesuits and Dominicans, and doesn't matter the order. We have the mission, one friar, and sometimes they have one soldiers to protect the friar and to teach the natives how to defend themselves from the Apaches or other. So it's very difficult to keep 400 people as slaves in a mission with just one friar and one soldier. So the system is not working in the enslavement of people. For that, you need to take the model of the plantations in Louisiana. So the system is totally different. And this is something that I get from the records. Each record, obviously, this is not like a history book, but each record is giving you a clue. But sometimes here and there in any page we have, for example, one which says, today the epidemic of smallpox finished. And this is something that you can cross with other documents in other archives, like St. Mary's or Our Lady of the Lake. They have a lot of records, and you put everything together, you cruise the data, and you get the real birth certificate of San Antonio. So those are the first people. And also we have recorded not only the natives, because until 1731, when the Canarios come to San Antonio, there were no other church to get baptized or to get interred or to get married. So everything, every single soul in San Antonio go to the Valero Church to make all those sacramental things.
Well, one thing that I thought that was interesting when I was reading the notes to the baptismal book was that you found that Mission Indians, when they were baptized, the tribal associations were still recorded in those baptismal records.
Yes, in every single baptismal, we have the nation. And in some of them, we also have the name that native had in his own nation. So this is very common. We know all of this because if the intention of the friar was just to acculturate people here, why record all those data? I'm guessing that we have around 100 nations, small nations. Some of them are just a family clan. And we can make a map of the nations around Texas just reading all those Spanish documents that many historians don't want to read, because the documents are in Spanish and are manuscript. And this is something that when I share in my social media, And people say, oh, thank you, because we couldn't read those documents because... And my question, why? Because they're manuscripts. Oh, my goodness. It's not even the Spanish. It's the manuscripts. So, yes, this is what I made in this case in those books. And, well, the books got the approval and support of the Archdiocese of San Antonio. Before that, it was very difficult to get access to the documents. And, well, now the books have the stamp of the Archdiocese, and if you go to the archives right now, you cannot touch, obviously, the original document. People are kind of mad about this because it's my documents, it's my property. No, it's not your property, because we have, for example, in one page we have 10 records. So imagine how many descendants of these 10 people, and all of them have the same right. So You cannot, and the shape of the documents are very poorly. We are almost going to lose those documents. So it's another thing good for the documents to have this transcription and translations, because when people go to the archives, the archivist of the archives showed us my books. And it's something that I did because...
Because nobody else would.
Well, we have a previous list that someone did in the past century, but it's not the same than this, because those books get even the last comma of the book. And it's not the same to get only the last name and the godparents and a date to have the whole record with everything on it. Yes, that was the first time someone did something like that. I did this just because people were asking, because it's not something that you get money from it, you know. And those books, the items I sell, is for a publisher to just do it. It's very expensive to publish a book. And they even have a lot of mistakes in the previous records with the other person did. So in those books, for example, in the Burials book, I bring to life again like 400 people that weren't just erased from the history, just because people weren't able to read the original documents. So the good part of this was that I even have some hugs, descendants of the people recorded on the books, and came to me and hugging me because... And for an archaeologist like me, dealing with people dead a long time ago, to find someone alive that is grateful to you because of this is something that shocked me.
Jorge Luis Garcia Ruiz is a historian and archaeologist who's translated the sacramental records of the Mission San Antonio de Valero, a mission we now know as the Alamo. When we come back, Garcia says the data he gets from cross-referencing the birth, marriage, and burial records reveal the history of San Antonio.
Only with the burials, you get nothing. Only with the marriages, you get some information. But getting the three together and crossing the information, you can trace the families to the Rio Grande Valley.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Families in South Texas can often trace their roots back to the early days of Spanish settlement. South Texans with indigenous roots have ties that go back millennia. Spanish colonial missions kept track of all the people who were born, married, and died there in their sacramental records. Historian and archaeologist Jorge Luis Garcia Ruiz has translated the centuries-old records at the Mission San Antonio de Valero, a building that's now arguably the most famous in Texas, the Alamo. These records date well over a century before the famous or infamous 1836 battle at the then-secularized ramshackle structure. Ruiz found that by cross-analyzing the baptismal, marriage, and burial records, he was able to trace the arrival or relocation of certain populations, or how diseases like smallpox or measles raced through the population. Ruiz says the records are also used by people curious about their genealogy.
That's the point I found a lot. People come in and say, oh, I didn't know that I was connected with this guy and the other woman and blah, 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 blah. Finally, we have some tool to get to your ancestors. And sometimes, sadly, to tell you that this one is not your ancestor. This are the three first books written in San Antonio, in Texas, written by the friars. In that time, the paper were very expensive. So they have a book, and the book needed to last 100 years or more. So even if the records are so repetitive, and they are, they needed to make it short. And they use a lot of abbreviations, and I developed all those abbreviations. So, for example, there is a company in the north that scan all those documents and put it in a website and trying to make connections, make links with the families. But the person doing that wasn't a Spanish speaker. So in some cases, in those abbreviations, we have a lot of Francos, which is an Italian name. It's not a Spanish name. If you develop the abbreviation, the Spanish name is Francisco. Well, they have a business vision of this to get money, but even if they have an idea of help people, they are doing just the opposite because they are confusion in the links and in the names and in everything.
Where did you find all of these records? Where are they kept?
In the Archdiocese of San Antonio, in the archive. The archives of the Archdiocese has a lot more documents. And the point is they have the original documents, and they have a very helpful thing that they made high-definition pictures of the documents. It's very helpful for the new researchers, the modern researchers, that we have access to some kind of electronic help, software help, to get to the documents. Because in some cases, the original document, you cannot read with your eye.
With your bare eyes.
Bare eyes. Mm-hmm. You cannot read it. I will need to work a lot to put some different lights over the document, and this is a lot of work, and it's not guaranteed to get the result at the end. But with the high-definition picture, it's very helpful. I can do a lot of things with my computer and finally get to the record. In some records really are washed by water. This is ink. So if along these 300 years or 200 years, if there is some humid or water over the book, you lost the records. But even in that case, with the help of the software, you can get access to the... For example, in the baptismals, I get 300 more people coming to light. In the burials, 400. The marriage book are in better condition. You can get the whole history of San Antonio crossing the data of the three books. Not only with one. Only with the burials, you get nothing. Only with the marriages, you get some information. But getting the three together and crossing the information, you can trace the families to the Rio Grande Valley. So far, the historians, they say, no, we don't care before 1718 because they were in the Rio Grande Valley. No, but all those people moved to San Antonio. So they are the ancestors of many people. So we have a narrative like the Yanaguana, you know that, and the Payaya, but the main characters of the San Antonio are precisely the Jaramés. It's a different nation. They came from the Rio Grande Valley. They were already Christianized when they came here, and they teach the Payayas, and they mix with the Payayas because we have in the marriages and in the baptismals, we have a lot of mixed couples from the Rio Grande Valley and from the San Antonio.
And this is just for one mission. Do the other missions here in the region have their own similar records? And do you plan to maybe tackle those as well?
So, yes, every single mission has the three books. Again, the mission is the commitment of the friar. What we have is a pueblo, what they call a pueblo. So in any pueblo in Spain, in South America, in North America, they have three books. This is the registrar. For example, I went to California to visit the missions like 3 years ago. And we got a picture that in one of the missions, I think it's San Juan Bautista in California, they had a sign over the cemetery saying, in this part, 4,300 natives were interred. In a mass grave. But this is because we have the records. So we have the records. We don't need to put every single tombstone. So you don't need to put a tombstone because they didn't have first the money and they didn't have the place to do it. So the way they were interred was in one over the other, and it's not really like a mass grave because all of them were Christians and all of them get a Christianized burial. So this is kind of ceremony that in that time the friars did very well. They didn't have the name over a tombstone, but they have the records over three books. And they were recorded in very good way. So we have the date, then we have the friar who did it, then we have the name the natives had before the Hispanization, we have the Spanish name. Sometimes in the burials book, we have the last names. we have the parents, we have the godparents, and we have a lot of information in this to trace all the families, all the genealogy on everyone.
What we're talking about here is what people now know is the Alamo, the Valero Mission, and people don't know it as that now. They know it as the Alamo, especially if you're not living in San Antonio or not really that familiar with the history there. And right now at the Alamo, they're sort of revitalizing it, and they're working on trying to expand the history of it, but still with that focus on that 1836 battle. You hear them saying that they want to talk a little bit more about what the Alamo was before it was the Alamo. But do you think they're going far enough? Because what you're telling us here is almost completely unknown to people who have lived here their whole life and probably, you know the story of the battle at the Alamo back and forth, not really knowing what came before. So I'm curious to know, if you had your way, if you were maybe sitting on that committee, what would you want included in that broader story of the Alamo?
They are making a new museum, like I put a Band-Aid. First, you need to tell the people what is Valero, because they don't know. Even the people in San Antonio, they don't know.
They would think Valero's a gas station.
Yeah. That's a problem. And if we don't get the support of the people, because they are purposely ignorant of all this history, they cannot push the people in charge to make some change to the narrative. I was telling, and I will get in trouble. I was telling someone one day in that place that asked me, "We are very surprised by your books, very amazed by your books, and we would like to make more deep our presentation of what happened in Valero, in San Antonio." And the question was only, what kind of impact had the Spaniards on the local population when they established the mission? Well, in that moment, I realized that I won't go further than this. Sadly, in San Antonio, because it's the same in the whole frontier, we have the same in New Mexico, and we have the same in California, everywhere. Because the rich Spaniards living on the Iberian Peninsula, they didn't come here to the frontier to deal with the Apaches and Comanches and all of that. So the people coming here were mostly Hispanized natives and mestizos. And I'm very proud to say the word mestizos, because some people are not so comfortable with that word. But this is something that defines people that many different ancestors, not just one purebred, you know. And we, the Spaniards, we are also mestizos in Europe. We have a lot of civilization and cultures coming to Spain, so we are very proud of that word. So the population in San Antonio, in the whole frontier, were mostly, we have, once the Canarios came, we have more Spanish from the Iberian Peninsula population. But until that moment, we have like one or two people from white origin coming to San Antonio. The rest were locals. They were called Spaniards because they were already baptized. They were already Christianized, but they were locals. So in the paper, we can read, this is Spaniards and this is Indio. Why to make that difference? Because the friars also were recording his own work. And the work was to convert the natives. And they have their own bosses. So they need to present the book.
And they need to please their bosses.
Yeah. And in those books, you have some people called Españoles. Spaniards. Why? Because they already were Christianized. They already were obliged to go to the church. So it's something that is not part of the work of the friar. But when they use the word Indio, for example, Gentil, what means? Gentil is the Indio that was not already Christianized. But they were living at the missions. So,
like a Gentile is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, Gentiles.
Non-Christian.
Gentiles, non-Christians. But I have proofs that in other missions, for example, French missions in Louisiana, and we have proofs also that in English language, they were called them savages. So from the very beginning, it's very different to be called Gentile than to be called savage. And this is something that the friars here in San Antonio bring respect to people in that time. The plan is to do a very complete book analyzing every single record in the three books. All that now I have only in my mind, all that database that I made crossing the data to put in black over white and publish it, because I think you need it. You guys need it here in San Antonio. Because the narrative so far is so corrupt. And that's the problem with the new museum in Del Amo. They are trying to perpetuate the same mistakes. And I don't think it's the way.
Dr. Jorge Luis Garcia Ruiz has translated the baptismal, marriage, and burial records from the Mission San Antonio de Valero, known today as the Alamo. The collective records contain thousands of entries that date from 1703 to 1788. Garcia has published each grouping of records in its own volume. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.